Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Friday, April 17th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jessica Mendoza, reading for Linda Feldman.
And I'm Peter Greer.
Last week, Linda Feldman's friend Marcy in Ann Arbor, Michigan, was preparing a Passover dinner when a spark from the stove lit up a nearby basket. Soon, the kitchen was in flames. She called the fire department and fled with her two dogs. Her house, damaged by smoke and water, was left uninhabitable. By that evening, Marcy already had an apartment and a bounty of food provided by friends. Most remarkably, she proceeded with the virtual Seder she had planned for family and friends across the country. It was an impressive display of resilience, a multi-hour meal she conducted with good cheer. Let's also applaud the firefighters who retrieved her laptop, phone, and purse before boarding up the house. Marcy should be back in her house next year. Across the nation, too, Americans are looking ahead to a time of renewal, though the coronavirus emergency is far from over. Yesterday, President Donald Trump laid out guidelines for reopening the country. He didn't address the shortage of testing and left decision-making to the states. Then today, he fanned anti-lockdown protests, tweeting out calls to liberate three Democratic-led states. But politics aside, planning is surely a process that people can agree is necessary. Governors are also looking ahead, as are other nations, as highlighted in today's first article. Now, on to our five stories, including European countries looking at easing lockdowns, how to help teens cope with isolation, and the pandemic time warp. Our first story. While everyone wants their national coronavirus lockdown to be over, figuring out how to phase it out safely is a task fraught with problems. In Europe, Austria and Denmark are two of the first to tackle it.
Even as the coronavirus pandemic continues to paralyze much of Europe, some countries, primarily the smaller ones that responded quickly to the outbreak, are beginning to try to relaunch society in the hopes that they have turned a corner. Austria and Denmark in particular are leading the way in restarting businesses and reopening schools. But plenty of concern remains, not just among business owners and customers, teachers and parents. Experts warn that reopening too quickly could set off a second wave of infections, meaning those nations will have to tread a careful path. The countries looking at easing restrictions are ones that can see that the death toll is now falling, says Martin McKee, professor of European public health at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. Of course, the unanswered question is whether this will continue as they do ease up, but only time will tell. Other countries will be watching closely. This story was reported by Dominique Sugel in Basel, Switzerland, and Denise Hruby in Vienna, Austria, for The Monitor.
The pandemic lockdown is depriving teenagers of their social groups and casting a shadow over their college and job futures. How can parents help teens cope with the isolation and uncertainty?
The coronavirus pandemic and the lockdown to fight it are happening at the same time teenagers are seeking autonomy and trying to create their own identity. Many middle-class teens and their parents express gratitude for their relative positions. They know some peers are in much more precarious situations. But as time grinds on and the shock and novelty of lockdown wears off, they are also mourning what they've had to give up, from sports to dance to the daily eye rolls and jabs that are the nonverbal social fabric of adolescent years. But Jeff Temple of the University of Texas Medical Branch at Galveston says that teens are also finding new ways to be themselves and adapt, even if in isolation, and that parents play a central role in helping them navigate the uncertainty. Key to that is shifting the dominating narrative about screen time and that it's ruining peer-to-peer relationships. In fact, argues Dr. Temple, it's the reverse. They know how to Snapchat with their friends and FaceTime and text, and that's real, he says. And so that might be what saves them from the loneliness during this pandemic. This story was reported by Sarah Miller-Yana in Toronto for The Monitor.
As the global coronavirus pandemic wears on, are the days and weeks blurring together for you? If so, you're not alone.
The coronavirus pandemic and the social distancing it requires is affecting everyone differently. Some people have found themselves with far more time on their hands than they know what to do with. Others, including healthcare professionals, those caring for sick family members, and parents of young children, are overwhelmed by the day's demands. But if there's one universal element to our experience, it's that it is distorting our sense of the passage of time. February feels as though it happened a decade ago. Days blur together, and the hours alternatively fly by and slow to a crawl, depending on how anxious or bored we're feeling and how many new memories we are generating. What's going on? Niels van der Ven, a psychologist at Tilburg University in the Netherlands, explains that these shifts in temporal perception happen when we lose the normal reference points that anchor our days and weeks. You can find the full audio by Rebecca Asulin and Owen O'Carroll in today's issue.
Amid the pandemic, people around the world are experiencing the kinds of confusion and courage that Wuhan lived with for months. A writer looks back at the early days and why it's important to remember those sacrifices.
In some ways, January 23rd was a normal winter morning in Wuhan. A little humid, sky still dark, the streets were wet after a shower. Street lights were on, but there was no one on the street, just a few cars passing by. Friends and colleagues kept sending our contributor messages. Can you get out? It was the early days of the coronavirus crisis. A few hours before, our contributor woke up to the news that Wuhan had announced a lockdown from 10 a.m. Visitors were racing to leave. Our contributor kept thinking of the overcrowded fever wards where they had been reporting and what it might mean to be stuck here. No hospital beds, scarce supplies, no friends. They made it out that day. First to quarantine in a hotel hundreds of miles away, then to their parents' house, and finally to yet another quarantine at home. Life has gradually gone back to normal, and even in Wuhan, people began cautiously heading out last week. But our contributor keeps thinking back to what they saw there and the stories that emerged after they left. Was their decision to leave that morning right? As China and the U.S. start a blame game, it's important to remember the sacrifices each individual made. This story was reported for The Monitor in Beijing and Wuhan. We've withheld the contributor's name to protect their identity.
At a time when many people are at home with kids, here's an installment from our Science at Home series. In this experiment, kids scientists can test the idea that the heavier something is, the faster it falls.
Why, on Earth, do feathers float and hammers drop? After all, a military parachute can weigh some 30 pounds, much heavier than a hammer, but it helps a paratrooper descend more slowly from a plane than a hammer would. You can find the answers and the experiment by Owen O'Carroll in today's issue.
Now, commentary on debt forbearance from The Monitor's editorial board. Much of the world is now in a spirit of generosity and forbearance toward debt, all in response to the unprecedented impact of the pandemic. On Wednesday, 20 of the world's richest nations agreed to freeze the debt obligations of about a quarter of humanity that lives in the poorest 76 countries. The International Monetary Fund has announced an immediate standstill for debt owed by 25 developing countries. Within countries, both elected leaders and private lenders are stepping up to ease the financial obligations of such groups as small businesses, renters, or people saddled with student loans. Because of the magnitude of the COVID-19 emergency, perhaps never before has the world had to come to grips with the nuanced difficulties of debt relief on such a large scale. By one estimate, 1 in 5 emerging market countries will default on debt obligations because of the financial damage from the coronavirus. As commerce has become more global, so too has understanding of the need to sometimes go easy on debt enforcement while still ensuring repayment at some point. In a closely knit world, the benefit of debt relief flows both ways. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thanks for joining us. Please come back Monday for a different look at resilience after a fire. The Monitor's Martin Coos and contributor Wayne Diorio visited Paradise, California, which burned in 2018 and is now drawing on communal strength amid the pandemic. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares what happened when a man and his colleagues began to exhibit flu-like symptoms. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Samantha Lane Perfoss and Jeff Turton.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor, copyright 2020.